Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, first up, let's talk about the news media bargaining code and this whole Google, Facebook stoush with media companies in Australia. Did you know that Google currently controls more than 94% of the market share for search engines in Australia? Look, it's a competitive market. If one company controlled 94% of anything else, you'd be concerned about it, wouldn't you? If 94% of every motor car sold in the country was one type of motor car, you'd probably worry about it. Have you imagined your life without Google? It's probably not. It's part of the vernacular, isn't it? It's even coined the word itself. I'll just Google it. Last year, the Australian government asked the ACCC, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, to develop a mandatory code of conduct to address the bargaining power imbalances between Australian news media businesses and digital platforms like Google and Facebook. Given Google's market power, were they simply doing as they chose in a market? Now, the code is essentially about ensuring media companies get paid fairly for the use of their content on search engines and social media platforms. In particular, because Google, you can find news on Google. None of it's collected by Google. There are no armies of Google journalists reporting news and posting it on Facebook. That's not how Google works. Over the last 6 months, there's been some pretty huge stoushes over the proposed news media bargaining code. Google threatened to withdraw its search engine from Australia. That was a pretty big and many saw as bullying threat. Didn't happen. And this week, a bunch of media companies have signed sort of side deals with Google. Earlier this week, Seven West Media announced a deal worth $30 million with Google. Well, we think it's $30 million. It's to say, the details are not entirely clear. Nine newspapers reported its own deal, and again, the figure of $30 million was dangled about, but as I say, the details of that amount aren't clear. Nine's yet to formally confirm the deal either. Facebook is yet to announce any deals, although it's currently negotiating with publishers. Given a world where many people, particularly younger people, say, that's where I get my news. If I want to find out anything, I just look at Facebook. Guardian Australia and the ABC are on the verge of signing deals, we're told. Talks with News Corp Australia are ongoing. Now, it's been a pretty fast-rolling story. The news is breaking every day. This is Treasurer Josh Frydenberg on what he says was a breakthrough today.
This is a historic moment, a world first. The digital giants entering into negotiations and agreements with Australian news media businesses to pay for original content. This will help sustain public interest journalism in this country for years to come. And it is leading the world in a critical microeconomic reform.
Yes, what Mr. Frydenberg is referring to, of course, is the proposed piece of legislation which will force Google and Facebook and other majors to negotiate with Australian news providers and provide them with fair compensation for the news that features on Google searches and Facebook feeds. If they don't agree and can't come to an agreement, there'll be an arbitration process by which an independent arbitrator will decide how much they have to pay. Google is paralysed with anxiety about this, says it's unfair, and that was the basis of their threat to leave the country. However, the legislation is likely to pass, and indeed as early as next week. Joining me tonight are three people who can talk about the intricacies of the deals and what it means for media consumption and production in Australia. It's a complicated topic. It's an area where expertise is essential. But if you'd like to ask any questions, please, now's the opportunity. 1-300-800-222, text 0467-922-702. Three guests tonight. Lisa Watts is the CEO of news and in opinion website The Conversation. Lisa, good evening.
Hello, Philip.
Hi, welcome to Nightlife. Tama Lever is a professor of internet studies at Curtin University in Perth in Western Australia and also joins us this evening. Tama, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks, good to be here.
And Marcus Strom's the president of the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance, which is essentially the journalists' union, and is also with us this evening as well. Marcus, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
G'day, Phil.
Great to have all of you with us. Well, a quick once around the panel, as you heard Treasurer Josh Frydenberg today just remark, it's an historic moment for the new media bargaining code. Marcus, do you think it is?
Yes, I think it is. I don't know if it's a world first. There was a deal recently in France where Google agreed to pay $98 million Australian to French media companies in a similar kind of deal. But it is important now that there's a bit of a rebalancing in between media companies and the organisations that distribute their content, which is Google and Facebook, fundamentally. And I think that's behind all the intricacy and difficulty, what we fundamentally have is a division historically in the last 20 years between news production and news distribution. Mm. They used to be in the same spot, and private companies could make money out of selling advertising. They've been split. News gets made over here, it gets distributed over there, and over there in Google and Facebook land is where all the money's made. Mm. So that money can't go back into making journalism. And that mean, for instance, in the last 10 years, there's been about 5,000 fewer journalists employed in Australia.
Mm. So you'd be with Josh Frydenberg that it is an historic day, is it?
Yeah, I think.
What's your thought, just initially?
Yes, it's historic in the sense that without the...
You guys have signed up, haven't you?
We have signed up. Yep. We have signed up, yep. I was saying to Tamma earlier how we've been involved in discussions with the ACCC as they develop the code, and also with Facebook and Google as they sought to find a way or a mechanism to sidestep the code and come up with their own way of paying for media, knowing it was coming and was somewhat inevitable. So it's been really a fascinating process to be in the middle of, to be honest. But it's historic, I think, because without it, without the code and the threat of the code, I don't think we would have had these large payments made to media that we've seen this week.
Mm. Are they large? You can tell us. How much are they paying you?
Proportionate to our circumstances. So in our case, not a huge amount because unlike, say, Seven have, I think, 34 newspaper titles. Marcus or Tamma might know the details more, but you think about the Seven Group, they've got a lot of regional television stations, radio, you know, a whole lot of media. And I think the $30 million that they're getting is for those 34 papers, including the only and the biggest newspaper in the Western Australia market, the West, and a number of others. Where, when you look at sort of value exchange, conversation operates in an entirely different way because our purpose is not to make money for shareholders. It's to share expertise and academic knowledge. Mm. And so our way of thinking about value is, I mean, we find Google incredibly valuable. We would have participated in the showcase product, for example, without getting any payment, sort of happily because it achieves our objectives. But it's enough for us to pay for an additional editor or two. But no more. So okay. It's not huge amounts of money by any means.
All right. We'll get to Google Showcase in a moment. Tamma, in the process of negotiation, it said that the code's been watered down in recent weeks. Have all these deals been done so that Google can escape the operation of the code, do you think?
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that the Treasurer made very clear today is that he reminded everyone that while there's a lot of bits and pieces of the code, one of the things that rests purely with the Treasurer is the ability to write down who the code applies to. He said from the beginning, initially, I will write down Google and Facebook. But what he said today is if Google makes enough deals that the Treasurer believes to be of the right size, and he's made it very clear that he thinks they are, he won't write Google down. So Facebook is the one that's clearly going to be in the firing line now. It looks like Google has done enough deals and has enough deals about to be announced that they're not going to be in the firing line, at least to start with.
Hmm. Okay, so in a sense, in the arm wrestle between Google and the government, the government's won here. Is that a fair way to put it?
I think the government will tell you that.
Exactly. I mean, Mr. Frydenberg has just told us that. Is that a fair way to put it, though?
I would say Google's won this round just as much, because Google isn't going, looks like it won't be subject to a code where there isn't a clear sense of what the upper boundaries were going to be for payments. I think that's one of the things that they were most worried about. And indeed, in the amendments that were put through today, the word reasonable has suddenly appeared. And I think the sort of deals we've seen in the last few days are setting the parameters for what reasonable might look like.
Okay, Marcus, can we go back a little? Why was there ever a need for the ACCC to draft this code? And why does the government seem to be so energised by it? After all, the governments of all persuasions historically don't like the media. Why are they suddenly so concerned about news gathering?
Well, I think the crisis of the finances of news media is enough to even overcome politicians' reticence to support journalists. I think without a viable news media, I mean, politicians are pretty vain. They like seeing themselves in the media. And if they haven't got a robust media to sell their wares in, it's a problem for them. It's a problem for the community. It's a problem for democracy. And I think there's enough push by friends of the government, as well as opponents of the government, in the media industry to say, hey, you've got to do something here. So that I think is part of the background behind this. I think Google has had a bit of a victory. We don't want them to be able to dodge everything, because we think that the smaller publishers will lose out. Sure, you've got the big nine and seven, and we understand news is in discussions with Google. They've got enough power to get a decent deal for themselves. But if you're looking at some of the smaller publishers, like an independent newspaper in Braidwood, for example, or down in South Australia, there's a few small publications have started. Are they going to lose out? Small radio stations, are they going to lose out? That's what our concern is, because it will not support regional media. And I think through the COVID crisis and the ongoing financial crisis, we've seen a real problem in regional, suburban and rural media losing out, as well as the big players.
Because some critics have said, oh, well, look, you know, it's just a thing which helps Rupert Murdoch, and that's why the government's energised by it. Is that a fair criticism?
I think there are some people who are saying that having News Corp on board with this has helped convince the government. That doesn't mean it's wrong just because Rupert Murdoch's in favour of it. I think it's the right thing to have done, and it's in the interest of news media for some of the advertising revenue that is gained by Google and Facebook off the back of news media distribution is shared with the content creators, to use that term.
Tama, can we go back to you on this? This is the whole conceptual problem of it, I suppose. Is Google and the other search engines and Facebook and all the other companies say, well, look, why should we pay for any of this? After all, we don't. All we do is link to these organisations, and that's all we're doing. So if you search something, we produce search results based on links. Explain why Google ought to be paying for this.
So I guess that the big question here is, how valuable is news to Google? Google has downplayed initially what the value of news, saying it's not that many people click through, it's not that big part of our business. But actually, the reason that Google works is that you can get everything. You can get access to everything. You know, you're finding everything when you search. And for Google to learn from you, for Google to make money by understanding the pattern of your behavior, it needs to be able to see everything that you click on. So Google needs to see your news consumption habits, even if it doesn't serve the content. It obviously at most displays a preview, but knowing where you go, knowing which things you will and won't click on, builds the profile of you that Google then sells to advertisers. Its business model is selling advertising. It needs to know as much about us as possible. And that's where the value of news really lies for Google. It tells Google what we like. And what we like is what it then packages up, aggregates, and can sell, and sell very successfully. We know they've got, you know, the vast majority of the market. So it clearly works well.
And so, and as Marcus was saying, the problem here is that if people are simply going to Google search to find out about news, they're not going to news companies to find out, and therefore the revenue is going to Google and not news companies, and Google don't employ journalists to report on any news, do they?
Not at all. So I think there is a fair argument here that while Google may not display all of the content. The value of that content is in helping people find it and helping people decide what they want to click on. So if you're not going to land on a news organization's page, but you're going to use Google as the conduit, then Google is getting benefit from that material existing. And it's a different sort of benefit from just the sort of benefit from, say, interacting with other people.
Mm. From your point of view, Lisa, as CEO of The Conversation, how important, I mean, I imagine it's very important, isn't it, Google to you?
Critical.
Because if people want to find out things, they often find their way back to you, don't they? Through
precisely.
Google.
Precisely. So more than half of our daily traffic comes from people doing Google searches. And that might be a year 12 student looking up something in their global politics class about a particular sort of issue. Or it could be a sort of a doctor or a nurse wanting to get information on the latest sort of story about vaccinations, etc. It could be a whole range of things. And I guess you have to imagine that if there was no quality journalistically produced content that answered those questions, Google's offering would be very poor, because you'd be left with God knows what, really, if you actually did have no news sources of substance that had professional curation behind it and all the kinds of journalistic efforts that go to making sort of a quality product. It'd be a pretty wild west of search results that you would find. And I think, you know, that's one of the key points, that it is valuable for Google beyond what it looks, because it adds to that sense that you get when you go to Google that you can find something worthwhile, not just sort of, you know, entertainment and rubbish and someone's blog. You can get something sort of substantial and something you can depend upon, because you've got quality journalism in amongst the search results. But obviously
so you say that's an argument for them paying, it's also an argument for you and the benefit of Google to you, because it increases your audience too.
Absolutely. It's definitely a value exchange. And that's the position we've taken with a lot of other publishers. I think we've done deals with Google, that it's a transaction. There is value on both sides. I don't feel like Google are stealing advertising revenue necessarily. I think if you look at the traditional ways in which newspapers funded themselves, clearly it was mostly through classified advertising. And if you look at the share price of Domain and Seek and other listed companies that have created such incredible value over the last, you know, couple of decades, that used to be newspaper money. Those rivers of gold, that was the thing that funded journalism. Google didn't steal that. That was done well before their march into sort of search results. They certainly have made a lot of money from other ways of monetizing audiences. But I think it's not accurate to say that they have sort of destroyed journalism in quite the way it's categorised at times.
No, it's complicated, isn't it, Marcus?
Yeah,
because in essence, I mean, can I put this to you? People have historically never really paid for, well, they've never paid for news. They've paid for advertising, and that's...
People used to buy newspapers?
Yes, but the newspapers, what they paid for the newspaper didn't cover the cost of the newspaper.
No, that's true.
The newspaper's business model was selling advertising. Well, the cost of the newspaper never paid for the newspaper, did it?
Well, this is an old problem, really, for people who want to make money out of the sharing of quality, independent information. For a bean counter... The investigative journalist is just a cost center. It's like, oh, do I have to spend more money on somebody, on Kate McClymont? Oh, she's expensive. She spends all that time on one story. You know, may end up putting somebody in jail who needs to go to jail. But so, and that was before the internet. That was just a cost. Journalists were a cost center. We are cost centers. And society needs to find a way to be able to investigate itself. And journalism is one of those ways. So, demanding this money back from Google and Facebook is another way of subsidising and paying for what is a democratic essential in society, which is an independent way to investigate wrongdoing, to investigate what's going on in society and hold a mirror up to what we do. And what this is fundamentally about is monopoly power. And that's changed its form with the internet age, but it's an old problem within capitalism, I suppose, is monopoly power. Google earned $4.3 billion in advertising revenue in Australia last year. It gets 53% of all advertising revenue online. That's a lot of power. And it came out in this discussion trying to play the sort of tech bro, the internet is just anarchism and anyone can be any, no one knows you're a dog on the online kind of thing, and it's freedom and the government's trying to tread on freedom. But that, at the same time, as Lisa was saying, they're the ones who have monetized the internet more than anybody
exactly.
else.
Exactly.
You can pay to have your company's search appear at the top of a search engine page. So I think they were being a bit disingenuous in saying that by trying to commercialize the relationship, it was ruining the internet.
Yes, exactly. And it's not actually a value-free search place anyway, isn't it? Because your search results will be dictated to by what you're interested in, because that's what they do. That's what Google and Facebook and these companies do. Tama, do you think that Google were ever serious about their threat to leave? Have they left any other market?
They haven't left the search market. They did remove the Google News product from Spain when Spain tried to do something similar some years back. So there was some historical precedent. Obviously, they are not in some other markets, but it's not for these reasons. But I think, Google did put that on the table, but pretty quickly said that's sort of the worst case scenario. We don't really want to do that. But I think it was actually more of a way of reminding many, many people that they use Google a lot every day and ask them to sort of consider, what if you didn't get Google? What would it do to your day-to-day existence to not be able to search? Would that have a knock-on impact to your Gmail on your Google Maps? And what would that do to the Android phones that Google basically powers? I think that was actually quite a sensible thing to do, because it did start many conversations about what would life post-Google look like in Australia, and nobody really wanted to get to that point.
It's pretty funny, Tamer, that in a battle to try and defend some of its monopoly power and so on, it reminded everybody, hey, we've got a lot of monopoly power here. So don't mess with us. I thought
that's
absolutely
true.
That was
an
interesting way to
go
about it.
Yeah, exactly.
People forget how effective that they have monopoly power in some respects, because they do a lot of things very well. And I guess that's the other thing they were reminding us. If I didn't have Google Maps, I would get lost a lot.
That's right.
So I think that reminder does serve a purpose as well.
No, of course. In fact, Google has become essential to many aspects of daily life in a way too. And that's the other side of the coin. I think as Lisa, you would acknowledge, and even in running your relatively small, I'm not being rude here, but because it's terrific, but in running your information and news website, Google provides a window to the rest of the world for people, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And they're good for a reason. They're big for a reason and successful for that. They do a fantastic service. The way in which they have reinvested their profits into technology to learn more and innovate more is outstanding. And I actually think if Google was to withdraw from the Australian market for search, I don't think it would be as catastrophic as we think.
There are other search engines.
There really are.
But everyone knows they're not as good.
I've been using DuckDuckGo as a little test in the last two weeks.
And?
It's not as good, but it's pretty good.
It's pretty good, yeah. And look, from our point of view, you think about media brands. If Google didn't exist and people were like, oh, where do I get my news from? An awful lot of people might then decide to go directly to the domain or the URL or the websites of brands that they know and trust. They'll go to the conversation, sign up to our daily newsletter. They'll go to The Guardian, they'll go to other sorts of trusted media, ABC, et cetera, as they do tend to do in times of crisis. They'll go directly to brands they trust, and that might actually be a good thing because if you knew that there was no quality news on the digital platforms, you could to some extent put it in the category of, okay, well, that's just fun and entertainment. When I need to really know something important, I'm going to go to brands that I already know and trust. It does shut out new entrants, and it makes it hard for smaller brands that don't have a well-known base, but it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Tama, can I ask you, and Marcus, I'll come back to you on another matter in a moment, but so what Google has announced, though, is they've announced payments, but essentially for people who want to participate in its thing called News Showcase. Can you explain what that is?
So Google News Showcase is essentially using the the current offering, so the Google News app and other ways that it serves news, and making some things essentially a lot more prominent. So it's about saying we won't just, you know, show a little bit, we'll actually show an even more impressive snippet. We'll actually have a feature page for each news organization. We'll essentially do a better job of making this stuff visible right. to potential readers. And to be fair, it does look a lot better. It was a little bit hard to find, to be honest, when it started rolling out last week. But it does do a better job of making things look appealing. The sort of value of clicking onto it, I think, it seems higher. Hmm. Yes.
Okay, but to make it clear, it's not that Google is paying for everything from news organisations. It's paying news organisations for the content that it features on this app, which is Google News Showcase. But still, something is better than nothing.
It's just another licensing agreement, yeah. really, isn't it? I mean,
a licensing agreement like Apple News. Is that right, Tama?
It almost certainly includes the clause, though, that it can also appear in search. So I think one of the things that it's done is, while Google News Showcase is the bit of Google that seems to be making the deals, it's also the case that it clears that content for every other bit of Google. And it's important here that we don't think it's not a per click thing, it's a lump sum payment. So it's, we get access to all of the content, whichever bits rise to the surface or not is a completely separate matter.
Okay, we're talking about what is admittedly a complicated issue, but yeah. also a very important one, and that is, how do massive corporations like Google and Facebook, and for that matter others too, Amazon and others, how can governments bring them to heel, in essence, or get them to return some of the value that they have aggregated to themselves and taken from other, what many people see as legitimate businesses and underpinnings of our democracy, like, for example, the gathering of news. Our guests tonight are Lisa Watts, who's the CEO of the website The Conversation, a terrific website if you've never visited there before, and I'd recommend it. Tama Lever is Professor of Internet Studies at Curtin University, who you just heard speaking. And Marcus Strom's with us too, President of the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance, the Journalists Union. Marcus, what is the government's legislation going to do, and will it force Google to pay any more money than it's already paying?
Well, it depends whether Josh Frydenberg writes the name down, Google, and
assume he does.
Well, what it will fundamentally do, a media company can go to Google and say, I think you should pay me this amount for the links you carry with my news. They sit down, have a discussion. If they come to a deal, great, the deal goes ahead, they register it. If it doesn't, they have the right to go to an arbiter. That is fundamentally what it is about. It is not a per-click payment, as Tamar said. It is about a lump sum, here's some money for a fair exchange. What we're concerned about really as a union, and I think what listeners should be worried about, there are no guarantees in the Act, there are no guarantees in any of these side agreements that money will be spent on journalism. And what our members will be doing in newsrooms is asking their bosses, well, how are you going to spend this money? How are you going to spend the $30 million, we'll ask Kerry Stokes. How are you going to spend the $30 million at Nine, Peter Costello, because we want that money to go into newsrooms, not to boardrooms. And because that's the spirit of the Act, that's the spirit of the deal, is to fund journalism.
That would be a fair expectation, wouldn't it?
You would think so.
The media companies don't simply trouser the money and spend it on executive fit-out.
You would hope not. The other question, I mean, if we could just maybe sort of focus out a little bit, we're at the beginning of the internet age. I mean, there are some of us on the planet, like you and me, Phil, who can remember a time without the internet.
Yes.
For the next however long humans are around, we'll have something like an internet. And it's very, very early days, as Zhao Enlai said about the French Revolution. It's probably a bit too early to pass judgment. So I think what we're seeing with the internet and Google, if you were designing a search engine, would you hand it over to a bunch of Silicon Valley tech bros to do? Should something more like the Tim Berners-Lee World Wide Web Consortium take control of Google, which has huge power, huge questions about privacy, confidentiality, can look into our very souls through our searches? Do we need to redesign search altogether? I mean, the idea that the Greens raised that we would have an Australian search engine to replace Google, I thought was a bit crackers. It would have been about as popular as Dick Smith's Aussie-mite, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting argument. Tama, your thoughts on this? Because after all, essentially, world search, well, let's put aside the arguments as to whether we're going to end up with the Chinese internet, you know, the Russian internet and the Western internet. But the internet that we use essentially in most of the Western world is owned by a private corporation in a way that's almost unprecedented, isn't it?
It's not the internet that's owned. And I think that's an important distinction, that the pipes
the search functions of the internet.
Absolutely, you're quite right. So, yes, the search function. I mean, to be fair, I guess Bing does have a bigger market share in the US than it does in Australia, for example. So it's not so irrelevant in the States, but it's still Google is still the market leader. And I do think one of the real challenges is, and one of the discussions that was quite odd in this whole debate, is that there was sort of the old idea of the internet. So when Tim Berners-Lee joined the discussion, he sort of pointed out, I invented the World Wide Web and I gave it away for free so that everyone could use it for free and build on top of that. And that's a very valid point. If he'd charged for that, we wouldn't have a World Wide Web. We'd have probably seven or eight different versions that couldn't talk to each other. But what Facebook and Google have done so successfully is hoover things up, take from that web, and then prevent things being given back. So they are giant corporations that have done incredibly well out of that infrastructure that already exists without really letting things flow back out of their platforms. And I think that's one of the challenges in this debate, that even if you support the idea that links at the most fundamental level shouldn't be charged for, you also support the idea probably that Google and Facebook are like black holes in terms of infrastructure.
Mm. Yes. Lisa, what are your thoughts about the fact that search is now essentially privately owned?
Look, it's a reality of living in a capitalist sort of environment where the most efficient tools and services become dominant. Mm. I think it's sort of ironic in a way that corporations like News Limited that were previously in those sorts of positions are the greatest critics of a competitor like that. But, you know, I think as an alternative way, like if this whole discussion and debate about the code was really designed to find a mechanism to pay for public interest journalism, then a better mechanism would be to tax the digital platforms through some sort of social license. And that was proposed by the Public Interest Journalism Initiative, PIDGI, recently in their submission to the government, to say, well, if there was a sort of social license to operate in Australia that was significant and an independent sort of body set up to distribute funds through grants for particular projects designed to, you know, to Marcus's early point, to do investigations, to do in-depth analysis, to do high-quality reporting across our 20 or 30 or 40 big important media outlets of all sizes, I think that would be a much better outcome because the money would directly flow to what it's supposed to do, which is provide our citizens in a democracy with fact-based, evidence-based, good content they can rely upon.
Tama, is the deal, these deals that Google's making in Australia, does this mean that in every market in the world they're going to now be forced to make these payments?
That is a fantastic question, because I think what a lot of people were looking at from outside Australia was the code the template? Could we take the Australian bargaining code and make it the Canadian bargaining code tomorrow?
Hmm.
And I think the answer there is probably not, because the way that this has been enacted, it means that I don't think they're going to write Google down. I think Facebook might be the only name initially, and I think Facebook will rapidly try and make deals and wiggle out of it as well. So it might be that this is a bit like a loaded gun, but it stays in the treasurer's drawer and we don't actually test the legislation to see if it works.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then it's much harder to replicate that elsewhere. But we do know, and the thing that's most important about this conversation, we do know that Google values news enough to pay for it. And I think every other country in the world is going, well, if that's a fact, we need to figure out how to get money.
Hmm. Marcus?
Yeah, I'm nodding.
Has Google just opened its wallet a tiny bit and put the problem to bed forever?
Well, no, it hasn't. Other countries will try and get their share now, won't they? And it's already happened in France to the tune of $100 million. It's happening here to a similar amount. It will happen and roll out. Other countries may use tax or other mechanisms. But what we're grappling with is this concept of, we essentially have a public commons. The internet is a public commons. And as you pointed out right at the beginning, Google is now a verb.
Mm.
It's in the English language and probably just about every other language. So a public commons run by a private monopoly, is quite unusual, and they're able to dictate civil society, when in a democratic society, civil society needs to be able to dictate to companies, not the other way around.
Exactly, not the other way around. Exactly. That's true, isn't it, Lisa, that in the past, of course, as we've seen with monopoly power, in general, companies, the United States has been particularly active here, in general, countries have seen the worth in breaking these big monopolies up, haven't they?
They have, and, you know, if Google, as you said earlier, was a sort of a car manufacturer, or, you know, the number one and the only sort of provider of air conditioners or some other thing, there'd be no issue amongst the general public with it. I think it speaks to the sort of dominance of Google in our lives, that it's a bit unthinkable to think about unwinding ourselves from it. And we trade off a sense of what we give up in terms of privacy for convenience, because it is so good and because it is so ubiquitous. And it's sort of, it seems a bit unbelievable to imagine, particularly if you're running, you know, Gmail and you're looking at YouTube and you're using Google Maps and, you know, the whole suite of what underpins our experiences online, a lot of it is really very much tied into Google. So I think there's a reluctance to think about breaking up it in quite the same way. However, there's a growing appetite, I think, to look at the various types of streams. You know, should YouTube stay the same in part of Alphabet? Would it be sensible to sort of look at sensible ways you could break up Google? But even Google search alone is still incredibly powerful, incredibly dominant. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Let's take a call or two. Sue's in Perth. Hello, Sue. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad.
I've been following this. I don't really understand it. All I know is I'm extremely concerned. I don't understand what the Morrison government is wanting. All I know is the most two used words on the planet are what? Google it. What are we going to do? Start saying Bing it? I don't think so. Like most people, I must use Google 50,000 times a day to spell words, to do everything, absolutely everything. And the thought of that being taken away from us quite honestly terrifies me. And the Morrison government, I don't understand what they're grasping for. What are they wanting? A piece of the pie? Or why?
I guess that's what our conversation's about, Sue. I guess I'll take it as a comment, but thank you. John, hello. G'day,
hi.
John. Hi.
I think a lot of politicians and policymakers have had a lot of difficulty for many years about how to deal with these huge, out-of-control, laissez-faire organisations. But there are precedents. There's a very interesting history book, I forget the name of the author, he's a British historian, called Anarchy, which is about the history of the British East India Company. There's a lot of similarities between some of these big companies and the out-of-control British East India Company in the early 19th century. I mean, it was bigger than governments. There were times when the British East India Company told the British government what to do. And eventually it was reined in. Another comparison is the way that Ralph Nader took on the big car companies. In many respects, Nader started the first consumer movement.
Yes, or that matter, for that matter, I suppose, when the big coal and steel corporations were broken up as well. Yeah, no, fair enough, John. I mean, it's not impossible to do, although, Lisa, you'd probably argue we're in unprecedented territory here, aren't we?
Well, just reflecting back to Sue's comments, I mean, I think a lot of people feel like Sue. Yeah. It's hard to imagine life without Google, and she doesn't want to.
No.
She wants to Google 50,000 times a day. People rely on it.
Yes, most people would say that Google is not a pernicious influence in our life. They would say it's
a
very positive one.
No, not at all. And so I think if we can find a way to manage some of the issues connected to that market power, and in this case, this issue is about how to fund public interest journalism in an environment where there's insufficient revenues flowing back to media companies. Hopefully the code will do that. But there's other issues about privacy, about all sorts of other sorts of problems that come with a monopoly, and those are yet to be sorted out by our government or any other.
I'd say on that where there are natural monopolies in society, which they exist, whether it would tend to lend themselves to be not controlled by individual private monopoly powers. I mean, that's me speaking for myself, not for the union. That's just my personal opinion. So it makes sense to have a transport system that is run by the government or an independent non-profit body.
Or a hospital system.
Or a hospital system. And I think the same would go for a search engine, in my opinion, is that you would want it in the hands of an independent, not-for-profit global consortium, such as the one that Tim Berners-Lee runs, rather than in the hands of a monopoly, private, profit-driven organisation.
Mm. All right, Rodney from Mount Isa. Hi, Rod.
Yeah, hello, Phil.
Hi.
Phil, I'm just a little bit curious, listening to what you've been talking about tonight, and it reminds me of the big turf wars that were fought between Murdoch and Packer and Fairfax back in the 70s and 80s that went on for years, and they rewrote the rules of not content, but ownership of TV stations and things like that, how much they could, what percentage they could own.
The arguments over pay television when that began as to who was going to
profit from that. Yeah, it was a huge thing there for years. And the rules, they wrote out, I don't know how many times they changed all the different governments that come in and they'd all have a go at it and that type of thing. But eventually it all died down. They seemed to reach a compromise. Well, what the biggest question I ask here is, out of all the money that Google's making, how much are they paying in income tax to the country? And,
I'll Google
we're going to get more, more income
Have you
tax?
Googled it, Rodney?
No, not yet.
It's a fair.
I'm not that illiterate, mate.
On you, Rod.
Unfortunately.
Thanks for your comment, Rodney. Yeah, no, interesting point too. Pedro's in Hobart. G'day, Pedro.
Look, I think Rod answered it for me. Packer and Murdoch really, for the last four decades, determined who was elected in Australia. Now, I think to a certain extent, Google might be doing the same thing indirectly. I don't know what we do about it. You get rid of Packer and Murdoch, and then you've got Google, who tend to do a similar thing on another format.
Yep, fair enough. Talking about the news and media bargaining code, the fact that Google's now appears to have paid up to some media organisations for the news that they feature on their content. One of my texters says, how much should Wikipedia pay for linking to news? Tama, are they going to have to pay?
No, I doubt very much anybody would go after a not-for-profit organisation like the Wikimedia organisation. Yep.
That's probably right.
Now, can I add, though, I mean, we're talking about these as they're too big, you know, monopolies and so on and so forth. The other partner, and so we've talked a lot about Google, but Facebook is, for example, facing antitrust legislation in the US. So Australia is not the only one out asking these questions. And I think even in the US, where these companies have been given incredible free rein to grow and expand, even in the US, the questions are being asked, are they too big? Are they too powerful? Are there too many pieces under one umbrella? And I think you look at the fact that Google, that Facebook is also, Instagram is also WhatsApp. These questions are being asked. And if that is successful, you can guarantee that Google's the next one in line.
And I guess, Lisa, that's right, because once you have information distribution systems this large, and they must regard this as a real threat too to them, to their existence, you become important in the political process hugely, don't you? By the fact that people participate and find out about the democratic process, and that is political options through these platforms.
Look, you do, although I think Google would argue that they have got quite sophisticated algorithms that will give you an answer that is good and valid and right, based on your preferences, but also answering the questions that you're seeking. Yes, I would say they have less political influence than, say, you know, News Limited, who might put out a particular political point of view or have, you know, some would argue, quite profound influence on the Australian political, you know, process.
What do you what do you think about that, Marcus? Do you think that's right?
Well, I don't think Google seems to have been as brazenly trying to
partisan.
Influence the they're not a part. I mean, they did drop "Do No Evil" as their company motto a few years ago, but they haven't quite gone into the "Do Evil" side of the ledger either. So, I don't think they're active out there trying to change governments that I can see. But underneath it all is what probably is of most importance to us, and also I would say to listeners, is that what has happened is money taken out of journalism means we know less about our society and we understand our society less. And there was a recent study, a third of councils in the last 5 years have had not a single piece of journalism done on them. So that's one third of councils in Australia have no review on what's going on in the council chambers. So that's a huge problem for democracy. And I hope that this this pressure from this bill, which has forced these deals, will mean a bit of money flowing back into newsrooms. So we'll be asking the companies, how are you going to spend the money?
Mm. Okay, well, a couple of last calls. Hello, Colin.
Yeah, hi there. Look, I'd take an entirely different view to what's being said. And I think that the Morrison government has just played into the hands of the Murdochocracy, because the reality is that if we try to get any kind of news from the Murdoch press on Twitter, Facebook, we are immediately hit with a paywall. Whereas the Independents, the Conversation, the Guardian and so on, ask you for a voluntary contribution, which I'm glad to pay, to get my monthly subscription to the New York Times or to the Guardian. Now, I know a lot of people don't pay that, but unless we have a free Google news service, we don't get the news. We only get one side of the news through the Murdochocracy. And, you know, it's really dangerous. If we look at climate news, for example, I mean, I get Greta's posts, and she posts the most up-to-date scientific information about global heating and the effect on the world. We wouldn't get that if we have to read the Murdoch Press, the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, The Australian, because they don't have climate news. Even the ABC, although it has a great online climate news, where's the climate news on the nightly broadcast that we watch on the nightly news? You know, we get the financial review, but we don't get any climate news. So thanks, Google, for providing that news free of charge, independent science that we can read and understand the huge problems that we're having around the world.
Sure.
Because without Google, we wouldn't get that news in Australia.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think, Lisa, about the effect of these deals and the legislation on the viability and the proliferation and of diversity in the media? I mean, is this going to mean it's easier for smaller voices to exist?
No, it's not. It'll mean that most of the value will flow to the large organisations that have the power, and that's a shame. I think, as I said earlier, the alternative model of getting, if Google paid the normal 30% corporate tax rate and they made, you know, close to $1 billion in revenue out of Australia, that would be a much better outcome overall. If that tax was distributed back in some sort of vehicle that was connected to public interest journalism and was able to go to, you know, write on the, you know, a title like Junkie or the Australian Financial Review and everything in between, I think that would be much, much better.
Hmm. Although Junkie, I think, are getting paid as well, aren't they?
They've just signed up.
Would, but it would be a pittance. Like, it wouldn't be a large amount.
No. I mean, Australia has the highest concentration media ownership of pretty much any country in the Western world. And Eric Beecher, who set up Crikey, said if this doesn't open up ownership, it won't have achieved what it wants, what it should. And I think that's what we should be hoping for.
Well, let's hope so too. And in a sense, I think we can fairly say, can't we, Marcus, that we don't know what the full implications of this are going to be until the government actually passes the legislation and decides what they're going to do about it, what they're going to do with it. But anyway, right. These deals are, I think all of you would conclude, more positive than negative.
Yes, I agree. Yes.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. Terrific to have your time too. Marcus Stroms, President of the MEAA. Tama Levis, Professor of Internet Studies at Curtin University. And Lisa Watts is the CEO of The Conversation, and drop in there too. Always good stuff. Thank you to all of you.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, and terrific to have you all with us as well.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.